making countries to WIPO, Institute of, amongst others, the traditional knowledge section. Now, in the meantime, I have spoken to, let me say that this is going to be the first item I'd like to discuss on the agenda. Second of all, I want us to look at what we are doing with this graph that we have in front of us. It's structure and intention. I want to
Madam Chair, that's all I have to add. Thank you.
Just one point. So I think it's fascinating that South Africa was actually one of the 19 countries on page 5 of this that you just handed out. At the bottom it says a submission on the 8th of July by Indonesia on behalf of the group of like-minded countries, and then it lists them. It's pretty much who I would have expected, including South Africa. I think, given that our government is engaged at this level on protecting traditional cultural expressions, I think we should be briefed by that person who was there. I would imagine if they're with the department, it should be relatively easy for them to come down and brief the committee on that process and what the input they made and to what extent they had to compromise to sign off the draft text or whether they were fully in support of it. Because what I'm concerned about is that there's a sort of dual carriageway going here, that science and technology is following one angle with these like-minded developing countries and WIPO, and we're doing another one, and we're not talking. I understand there's an open invite for the committee to come and attend here, but clearly we've now got evidence that the department's apparently doing something. Let's get them to tell us what's happening that side.
I can respond on that. I actually spoke to the DG of Science and Technology myself. There is an intergovernmental task team that is working on this, which includes DTI and DST, and I think one or two other departments. I think one of them is agriculture and one of them environment, although I stand corrected on that one. And apparently the work that they are doing is shared always in that context. I think we have now then got clarity on this. I mean, it was my impression from what I heard that South Africa was more of an observer in this process, although it is not set out here like that. I have not seen the text, I must confess, I don't know if you have, that they presented, but it looked to me like it was quite a focus on genetic resources. So I think we must definitely follow up on that process. And see what we can determine from this from whatever has been presented to WIPO. I think you can see there again that there's concerns that there's still been some reluctance to establish a draft negotiating text for genetic resources. It cannot go forward without such a text. I think they're still quite far from having a proper negotiating text. That is certainly my impression. I'm sorry that Von Braun is not here. She's apparently on leave or something at the moment. But she was the one that has been forwarding this information to us. I do not have any objection to us getting somebody to come and brief this task team on what happened in Bali and what the text involved. And what South Africa's role is, I think that might be quite useful. So we can take that from there. We can take that from there, and perhaps at our next meeting, we can ensure that such a person does in fact brief us. But there's also my concern that we don't want to be doing something that's out of step with what government is doing. But as I say, I was assured by the DG of Science and Technology that an intergovernmental group is working together on this matter, and I spoke to him personally. So I think that we have DTI people here, and we are able to make sure that our work does not conflict in the way in which government is operating on this matter. Tim?
Sorry, I think it's great that you've accepted that we should invite someone. I think it's quite interesting that if I didn't open the newspaper in a place called Chandidasa in East Bali that day, that we wouldn't have known about this. I think it's all very well that the department is in contact with them, but they're not telling us what's going on, and we're the legislating body. I feel like we've been cut off. I don't, frankly, I just don't trust them enough. I think if we're going to be legislating, facilitating. We need direct access to the engagement that, that our government's having on the potential of legislating. Also, I understand that they might be covering genetic resources, but at least in this paragraph, it indicates there's three documents, one on traditional cultural expressions, one on traditional knowledge, and one on genetic resources. So I would imagine that there is some input here that's extremely relevant to our law.
I'm not sure that if you hadn't opened the newspaper that we still wouldn't have received this, you know, which is from Johanna. But I take your point, and I do think that we have to urge in our committee meeting tomorrow that we have a that we get up-to-date information about any processes that are happening at an international level on South Africa's behalf on the subject matter that we are dealing with, in order that we are kept abreast of those issues. I think that that's fair enough. Okay, so can I say then on this one that we all be allowed to go through this in slightly more detail, have a look at what has occurred at the international level, check the links, which, as I say, I have not had time to do either, mainly reports from IP Watch, it would seem, but others, and see if we can come back to this at our next task team meeting, so that we keep one stream open to what is happening on the WIPO side, the international side. But I'd like to say once more that my engagement with the DST was very positive in that they feel that the government departments are in fact talking to each other. We need to extend that to ensure that our committee is kept informed of those negotiations. May I move on? Okay, now the next thing I want to try and tackle here, and I realize that this is something that we're going to have to deal with at the committee level. But what I'd like to ask is a simple question of everybody around this table about where we are with our draft, what we've called 1.3. Is everybody on board with which document we're referring to? It is the one that was presented to us in Katu. Is that okay? Now, what I'd like to say is I have gone through it once more and quite carefully, and I believe that it is a draft text on which we can work from now on. I'd like us to have a discussion, if you wish to, on this. If you agree with me, that's fine. What I would like to add, though, is that I believe that everything that is underlined here in terms of drafting procedure is insertions. This to me indicates that we are approaching this matter as specific protection for IK through the insertion, not incisions, insertions, through the insertion of specific clauses under each of the sections that we've identified. In other words, the way I see this draft is it is amending the foundation of our intellectual property through the insertion of special protection for IK. To me, this goes a long way to achieving the objectives that we as a committee and as a task team wish to do, which is fundamentally to offer protection to indigenous and traditional knowledge in our society. I therefore am asking this task team whether we can proceed on that basis and look, which is my next item on the agenda, and look specifically at the areas which we still need further explanation, we need perhaps expert advice, and we need further debate. So to try and isolate or flag, as we've done in many other bills in this committee, the areas that we need to flag for further discussion. So I'd like to just get comment on that, please.
Thanks, Chair. As I said in the Northern Cape, I think this is a vast improvement on anything that we've seen before. I also, however, think practically, I think because for the first time it recognizes that we're dealing with something that is quite different here. I think all through the text now there's an acknowledgement that you need something new to protect this new type of IP. That, however, raises the question of whether acknowledging that this is new and therefore requires something new to protect it, is it most efficient to amend four pieces of law as opposed to following the kind of customized approach of writing a new IP law to complement those other pieces? And it really just becomes a matter of practicality now. I think if all parties agree that this law is an improvement and this is going in the right direction, then I think that the major substantive difference, aside from ironing out some of the definitions and some of the kind of contradictions in the first text, that the major difference here is that it recognizes there's a new type of IP that we're dealing with. The question then is it simpler and more practical to follow this avenue of inserting discrete chapters into the existing laws, or should we just write a new piece of law? And in terms of my thinking, I still stand by the fact that it would be simpler just to simply add a new IP law that protects traditional knowledge in the spirit of everything that's on the table before us right now. I think that would solve a lot of the existing problems listed on the outstanding major issues document. So that would solve some of the existing major issues in terms of definitions and the drafting of the law. There is one more principle which I think a customized law would satisfy that this draft doesn't, and that is simplicity in terms of the public understanding. At this point, if you have traditional knowledge or you suspect you have traditional knowledge that needs to be protected, if we follow this avenue, you'll have to read at least four pieces of legislation. And more importantly, you won't just be able to read the discrete sections, because I don't know exactly where it is, but there is reference in the draft to the fact that the entire body of IP applies where it's not covered in the new discrete sections. So actually, if you really want to get your traditional knowledge protected, you have to read everything that's new on the table plus all of the old IP law. It just becomes very complicated in terms of the layman's understanding, let alone ours. So I think at some point we must consider the simplicity of our law and how easy it is to understand, and whether perhaps the complexity of amending four pieces of law might make it prohibitive, especially given the types of communities that this law is trying to serve. I think we must really strive for providing as simple protection as possible.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask a question. First of all, at what stage will the experts come into the process with us to look at this? Because I'm concerned that if we start looking at the details and do extensive work, and then the experts come later on and they say, but it's wrong, or whatever the case may be, that we have to redo work. So it's just a procedural matter that I'm concerned about, first of all. Then secondly, I would like to mirror Honourable Harris's comments, because this law will be written, or is written, for poor people, normally people in the rural areas and so on. One would expect them to understand intellectual property in its fullest extent, to be able to understand their rights if you read they would have to read all four laws, and the rights as given right now is being enmeshed in the IP system. Now, that in itself is not necessarily wrong. That's just one foot to stand on, which is not something that is inconsistent with what world practice is. But it would be more practical if there was a separate law in the end of the day that sets out all of these rights, that would contain IP-like regulations, so taking out the IP norms in the existing laws and putting it in a separate law. And one of the things that came out when I spoke to WIPO in Geneva is that South Africa is actually at the threshold to make history. The last time, I'm speaking under correction, but the last time an intellectual property form was created was a couple of hundred years ago. And if we create a separate law that has IP characteristics, but also more characteristics that, as the treaty draft shows, deals with things that falls outside of IP, like competition law and so forth, product regulation, then we would be actually truly making history, because we would be creating a completely new protectable interest, as it was the case with copyright 200 years ago in England. And that would probably be the more responsible way of progressing with this law in the end of the day. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Look, I think I'm just going to comment, and then I'm going to ask some of our support people here, our drafting team, to also comment, because they, of course, have been responsible for putting this whole thing together. And sorry, welcome, Advocate Quetta. We did get your message that you were engaged in another meeting. Thanks. What I want to say is the question of how accessible the law is to communities is a very vexing one. It is something that has concerned this parliament and many other parliaments over the years. We've tried plain language approach. We've tried all sorts of things. But ultimately, law is complex. I think the point that we need to make from this process, though, is that we need to have, and I think it has been made during our deliberations through a wide range of engagements, I think we have to have something that explains very carefully and in simple terms what is required under this law for communities to ensure that they get the protection that we intend for them through this legislation. I'm not sure that a law will ever be simple enough for somebody to just pick up, read, and know what they have to do. I think that laws are by nature, and this may not be correct, and it may not be an ideal situation, they are by nature complex, and a person reading in a second or third language is unlikely to ever understand them. It is a bit of an indictment, I have to say, on the legal system, but it is also the case. On the second matter, it would seem to me that what we have in front of us is, in fact, as I said earlier, standalone protection for IK. It appears to me that this forms these discrete, as you call them, clauses, form precisely the protection that we're looking for, and are identified clearly through the passage of this piece of legislation. What I'd like to do now, though, is ask the drafters to perhaps give us their comments on this. Look at Quetta, you first.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of accessibility of the legislation to the lay person, chairperson, as you stated, it is a very touchy matter here. The only part that I see in the bill that may assist is a provision that the council may pitch in and intervene if the council feels that during the negotiations between the indigenous community and any other person and the contract between them is not going to benefit or benefiting the indigenous community, then the council may intervene and instruct for regular negotiations of the contract. Maybe that disadvantage may also be based on the issue of maybe not understanding all the issues on the part of the indigenous community here, but it's a very touchy issue. But let me come to the issue of the bill itself. Chair, this draft, Chair, is different from the original introduced version, Chair, in that in this particular bill now, in all the four acts, there is one area, or rather, Chair, is not the provision dealing with IK are not scattered everywhere in each of the pieces of legislation, Chair. It is confined to specific chapters or specific group of sections that are in sequence in each piece of legislation. The other issue, Chair, is that we must also consider the effect of legislation, Chair. What is the effect of legislation if the legislation is in one piece of legislation, one act of parliament or a bill? I mean, sort of an act of parliament. If it is in one act of parliament and also the provisions are in various pieces of legislation. Now, what is the effect of that linked to the constitution? Now, Chair, in my view, and the what is envisaged here is for the protection of IK on behalf of indigenous communities. Will, if this bill becomes an act of parliament, will it have the effect of protecting the IK belonging to indigenous communities as a force of law? In my vision, it will, because this legislation will have a force of law, Chair, in terms of the constitution, which has been passed by parliament. It will have been passed by parliament, rather. In my vision, this will still amount to protection of IK, of indigenous communities, if this bill is passed as it is. I'm not sure whether it would be to their disadvantage if it is in this particular way, Chair, but not in one piece of legislation like the sui generis approach. In my view, Chair, I believe we can move along with this, Chair, as the committee has indicated before. I do believe, Chair, that we can protect the IK based on this approach that we have followed at the moment, Chair. Thank you.
Going from left to right, and the lady next to me will be last, unfortunately. I will try and be brief. I always try, as you know my position, I always try to shy away from pronouncing or expressing myself on matters of policy. I'm not a policy maker, I'm in a different capacity. So when I speak, I will speak from that capacity. But please allow me, Madam Chair, just to say a few, or make a few observations purely based on maybe legal principle, so to speak. I hear what Mr. Harris is saying when the argument is, why is it that we now might be looking at a different and distinguishable species of intellectual property? What would be our motivation in saying that because this is now a separable new species of intellectual property, why would we not give it the necessary recognition and put it in a principle act of its own. Clearly it's a valid argument. Why, if we have a look, for instance, at one of these principal acts, the Designs Act, and we have a look at the definition of design, then we will see that based on that definition, it is a separate animal or a separate species. It is clearly distinguishable from the definition of trademarks, for instance. So if you have something that is distinguishable from a design, why do you put it by way of an amendment in the Designs Act? If it's, for instance, a trademark, you wouldn't find legislation dealing with trademarks in designs. You would find it in that separate principal act dealing with trademarks. The very same argument applies in respect of the Performance Protection Act and the other one that we're dealing with here. But please allow me to say this. Are we correct in saying that the species of intellectual property right being protected by this, if it would become law, is clearly distinguishable or severable from the four principal acts that we're dealing with here? And then, with respect, I would like to say that the answer is no. Yes, we can say that a trademark is clearly severable from a design. We can simply read the definitions and we will see that it is so. So they should be separated. They are, by nature, incompatible with one another, and they should not be interspersed in the same principal act. I agree. But allow me, by way of example, to illustrate why intellectual knowledge is not really severable in law from either a design or a trademark or copyright or the other one. And please allow me maybe to refer to a, or let me not refer to specifics in the bill. Let's rather discuss. A design, a trademark, and the other two as well, they may almost necessarily be derived from indigenous knowledge. You may have a performance, if we look at the definition, where it is clear that the performance as an intellectual property right has in essence been derived from its origin intellectual knowledge that is possessed by a certain community. That is why we have the word derived everywhere and here in this legislation. So what I'm saying in essence, or what I would like us to consider properly, is are we correct in saying that this is a separate species and should be protected separately in its own principal act? By offering that argument, aren't we losing sight of the fact that to a large extent, in most instances, we will find that intellectual property, or let me put it the other way around, we will find that designs and trademarks and rest have actually been derived from intellectual knowledge, and therefore they are not incompatible. They are not really severable because of that link in origin. So why is it then structurally or does it present a problem or an issue to find it in four different intellectual property law acts? If not acts, just in conclusion, Madam Chair, just allow me to say the following. I agree that if we have a look at the introduced bill, that is really a problematic bill. Because, for instance, if we read that, we will see if you would like to locate all the amendments, you would have to read Section 2, Section 7, Section 11, Section 23, and so we carry on. The redraft, with respect, makes it a lot simpler. It is almost like inserting a separate chapter in a very conspicuous manner into each one of those principal acts. We no longer have this interspersed kind of amendments in the various principal acts. In closing, there has been so many arguments in favor of sui generis legislation. But if we look at the essence of what we're having in this redraft, aren't we actually very, very close to providing for sui generis legislation? Because now if you open the Designs Act, you will see a definition in Section 1 dealing with indigenous knowledge, and you will go to Section 8, you will find a single Section 8 from A to J, whatever the alphabetical order might be, and in isolation and separately within that Designs Act dealing with indigenous knowledge. I will leave it there for now, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to maybe first advise from a procedural point of view, because that is more or less my role in any event. What the committee is allowed to do in respect of any introduced bill is to accept it, reject it, or redraft it. And with your acceptance will come your amendments, your deliberation, etc. And then from there, accept it, or reject or redraft. The decision that was taken here was, when looking at the bill, the committee was not even able to start deliberations. It just was, there were too many things not included, and that is what the process was that we followed. One of the big problems that the introduced bill had, as Advocate Stratum just commented, was that because of your amendment of specific sections, there became a lot of almost consequential problems that came into play. The biggest one, namely whether the bill is actually achieving its objective, namely protection of traditional intellectual property. The reason for that was that what was decided was to use the current systems to protect traditional intellectual property. But if you amend each section, you have the problem that your intellectual property system as a whole applied, and when you look at interpretation of laws, you might have found a conflict, so that your intellectual property, for instance, the easiest example is with Designs, that it would have been required to be new, which is impossible. So you would have had that kind of conflict. So when looking at what this committee can do, the decision was made to redraft. When you redraft, we are sort of limited by the process of what is before the committee. That is what can be redrafted. For this redraft to become a separate bill is impossible. The committee will have to reject the introduced bill, and the DJR will have to commence the process anew. In fact, thinking about the WIPO process being a lot broader, covering competition, etc., it will probably have to be in this instance, competition falls now under economic development, so you already will have two departments having to bring one bill. Procedurally, we need to keep in mind that legislation is the result of a process of policy that was approved. The policy that was approved indicated that traditional knowledge will be protected, but it will be protected within the sphere of each type of law. In other words, agriculture will do their bit, DST will do their bit, DGR will do their bit. That is how I understand this policy to have been accepted. So if this committee rejects and it goes back, that whole policy will have to be re-looked at. Now, if we then go forward and we look at what was done, I actually want to take it a bit further than Advocate Stratum. I'm of the opinion that we did create a sui generis system on IP. Not like WIPO, but on IP. We have created a sui generis system. The question for me is, and this is where our experts are very important, is whether we are actually affording the protection that we now want with this separate system. So that for me is a very important question. But if we say that we want this to be applied in a separate bill, in other words, a standalone piece of legislation, we will have to ask whether the delay, because remember we're also working with people's rights who are currently being infringed without protection, and the delay that that process will cause, we need to ask ourselves if that is justified. Because what we have currently is a bill that could provide that protection given inputs by the experts. Okay, so let's say we work through this, the experts give the inputs, we can have this protection. So we can achieve the object which started out with the policy. If we delay the process, when the minister goes back to cabinet, will they be able to justify why they had to come back to redraft on a separate bill? So I am a bit worried about that. I do understand the concept of accessibility, but as Ms. Marmara said, it's unfortunately so that lawyers have to make an existence, you know, and for us to be able to exist, we have to have laws be very, very complicated. It's like state secret. We need to keep them complicated. But actually, it's simply that because law develops over years, and certain terms and words and things have a meaning that have hundreds of years of history behind that one word. So if I say to you, waive, I waive my right, it actually means something that comes from with centuries behind it. And to change that tiny word actually has a huge implication in law. So it's not just that we're trying to be difficult as lawyers. It really it has impact. And what we've provided for in this bill is something that I think will actually assist better than even a separate law can assist. With a separate law, if we do separate law, we will have to, or DGI will have to, bring in the current IP system as it is. In what I mean with that is, what we've done currently, we're building on what is there, what currently is in existence in IP. So we're sort of adding on to that. If we take that add-on away from the acts and put it in a separate act, we will have to include all the relevant aspects of the Copyright Act, of the Trademarks Act, of the Designs Act, to ensure that those aspects are actually covered. So you're going to not have a 90-page document, probably going to sit with it easily 200-page document, because you'll have to bring all those aspects into one bill. So you're anything not going to have an easy-to-read bill. What we're dealing with is very abstract. I mean, I'm not even pretending that I'm an expert on IP. It is a very highly, highly sophisticated area of law because it is so abstract. So I don't think we'll be able to achieve that. But what we have provided is that the minister can issue guidelines. And I think that is something that must really be interrogated when we do deliberations, to maybe even expand on what guidelines should be or could be issued on. It could even be changed to should issue guidelines. And those kind of guidelines, I think, is where you will reach your community, because you can bring your language down significantly, make your language quite simplistic, simply because you don't have this legal battle to keep in your mind. So I do think that accessibility to communities has been covered. I think we are providing for that in the best way that I can think of. And then the one thing that just was mentioned on process and WIPO, I don't think that we provide for process, and I think that's a very important issue. So, but that for me speaks to whether what we have before us is actually protecting sufficiently, and that can be dealt with in the format that it is currently. But the question then is, do we protect process? Why don't we protect process? How do we protect process? What is the process that we want to protect? And then we add it. I mean, we can actually get out of here with maybe not a perfect document, but quite a good one. Just to make one comment on WIPO further, is that if you look at the documents of WIPO, they are very broadly worded. And I think the approach that was taken with the policy by saying, look, we're not going to give a blanket protection, we're rather going to focus on every type of law that affects intellectual knowledge, is that we have just slightly moved the focus. Instead of saying one bill with a broad focus, we are actually seeing how much we can protect in each law. It might mean a lot more work, but it could be a lot more effective as well. And that is it. Thank you very much.
Look, I think this is a very, very interesting and intricate debate, and I think the debates that have been put forward from many sides are very compelling. So I don't really know where we go from here. What I would like to suggest, though, is, and I'm sure my colleagues here next to me will slam me down whether they think it's necessary, is I think we have sufficient information in front of us and sufficient agreement that this is a much better product, that we can actually go forward on this text. Now, if I'm going to get huge objection to that, then I will hear you. I think that a number of the issues that were raised by both other members of the opposition party are things that we really need to consider. The one is the one that Charmaine tried to address on protecting a thing or a process, and I think that we may need to debate in further detail when we come to relevant sections on that. But it is my view that the draft that we have before us sufficiently deals with the question of the protection of intellectual indigenous property. No, that's the wrong way around, isn't it? Indigenous knowledge in IP, that we actually have something worthwhile to work through. This is not to say that we're going to close down any discussion on any items where people feel that parties feel that there is not sufficient protection or that there are errors for one way or another. But I'd just like to say that my own view is that we have sufficient material in front of us and sufficient acceptance of the material in front of us as worthy that we can proceed. The second issue that I wanted to tackle was a question of where the experts come in, and it was my intention that today we started to look, guided by this document but also the other document, at where we can draft questions for the various experts in order to get their opinion and their view on some of the matters that are still unresolved. You'll recall that our document that looked like this from Katu had a number of pages where there were issues that had been resolved in terms of the drafting, and there were a number of pages that there were unresolved, both minor and major issues unresolved. And I think we need to start there with the experts and getting their view. But my intention was that as a result of this meeting, we would begin already to bring in the experts on trying to resolve some of those issues with the agreement of the committee. Is there any further, Tim?
Okay, on your final point, I think it would just be useful for me if we could get an explanation from Advocate Quella and Advocate Fanamago on what exactly, just the difference between these three documents. I haven't had a chance to go through any of them yet, but what do they each contain, and do any of them supersede any others? But that's in terms of, there's the red one, the new red one, and then there's a doc connecting drafts 1 and 2 and 1.2 and 1.3. I got that one.
Okay, that was because you had the draft
too. Oh, is that my interpretation? Okay.
That was, I think that one was to help you to see what had happened since draft 2.
Okay. Okay, got
while
it.
While you were reading draft 3. Okay.
And then this one.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
Well, let's start there, unless, Anton, you have something else to add in the meeting.
No, sorry, I was starting with the easy one.
I was going to have to.
Look, I think there were some strong arguments made from the other side of the table, but I'm still not entirely convinced. I mean, if I can summarize it in the following way, and perhaps let me know if I'm doing this injustice, but in fact, the argument from Advocate Stratum that designs were created as standalone because they're substantially different is in fact the argument that I was going to use for why we should create a standalone law. Yeah, I mean, I think you probably, when they were designing the Designs Act, there was probably a view that we should just simply cover designs in copyright. And perhaps we need to go through that same argument. I'm not sure if those I don't understand the technicalities well enough, but perhaps we need to ventilate them more to see if in fact maybe there is sufficient difference between what we're calling indigenous knowledge and the existing species. And in fact, the fact that we've moved substantially since we started this process to now, in terms of tackling indigenous knowledge as a standalone species, to the point where I think the line was said we were very, very close to providing sui generis protection. I think the fact that all of these amendments get closer and closer to sui generis just simply underline the fact that we're seeing that traditional knowledge is in fact a different species. And I think at some point the committee, I don't know if it's a task team that needs to consider this, but the committee should consider the basic approach of amending versus drafting a new set. And then Advocate Fundamava's concern that we would have to send the bill back to the DTI, I don't think we should be afraid of doing that in this committee. I think the policy, and I tried to find it now, but I couldn't. But if the policy said that each of the departments needs to deal with their specific area of traditional knowledge, I think that's entirely compatible with a sui generis approach. I don't think we're arguing that we need to be starting to cover genetic resources in this. We'll leave that to science and technology. We'll protect traditional knowledge within the remits of the policy, but we'll either do it by amending four laws, or we'll do it by writing a new law. And I, in terms of pushing back the time frames, sure, we would push back the time frames. But I don't, from a lot of the work that's been done here, could simply be put into a new draft. Most of the work, from what I can see, has been done. It's just simply a way of how we structure it. The other advantage of delaying, and I'm not suggesting we delay till 2013 when WIPO finishes their process, but the more we allow WIPO to finish their draft law, the higher likelihood that we have of being in step with WIPO as opposed to being out of step with WIPO. And I'm not sure that we're concerned enough about being out of step with the international community. I think we could potentially have a great law on the table which in 2 years' time it could be incompatible with what WIPO decides. But that said, I'm not suggesting we delay for that many years. I'm just simply suggesting that sending the DTI back and redrafting, perhaps even as a committee, because the law doesn't need to come from the DTI, it can come from us, is not necessarily such a bad thing. So, if you're looking for a consensus view from the task team, I'm afraid you're not going to get it from me. But it is ultimately a committee decision, and tomorrow, if we consider it there, I will make the case again.
Chair, I would like to hear the views of the experts, actually, on the whole law, not just the outstanding issues. While I've got a legal background, you know, we're not all experts on indigenous knowledge, and I would like to hear the views of the experts really to inform us. I mean, there are many opposing views out there. Some say yes, sui generis is an absolute must. Some say no, you can go hybrid. Others say no, well, IP is enough. And you have departments with different views. I know that DST has a different view from BTI. I always say, whatever we do, it must work. It must not cost extra money for the taxpayer, and it must actually work for what it was intended to do. It must serve the communities it was created for. I understand you've made some very persuasive arguments regarding rewriting an IP text in a standalone law, which makes it a very lengthy law in the end of the day, which is also not as accessible and so on. To be honest, I'm not sure if I actually understand enough about indigenous knowledge to know whether that would actually be necessary at all. I would like to actually see that the experts come in at a very earlier stage and give us some guidance as to where things should go. Because I can see from a lawyer perspective, I can see the logic in the approach as it is at the moment. And this draft bill is much better. It's a huge improvement. From a sociologist's point of view, perhaps, I'm not sure.
I'm named it in
And we need the input of the experts and people who will tell us, well, this will actually work, and it won't be a wasteful expenditure and drag on the taxpayers' purse. Thank you.
You see, I think that is probably the most compelling a guideline that we should be looking at. Is it going to work? Is it going to work? And that is what we as legislators must focus on. I think from my discussions with the various members of the drafting team and others, that was also their focus in drafting it, making it look and be in a way that it will actually and that its effect will be that it works to achieve what we want to achieve. But I don't think we're going to agree on this, because there's no way of us sort of saying that it will work until it's put into practice. So it's going to be a very complicated thing. I'd like to go back to the easy question and try and... did you want to say something, Advocate Strader? Sure, sure. No. Okay, let me go back to the easy stuff. And then we can pick that, hopefully, and then I'll come back to this discussion and open the floor for you. Could we now just ask Charmaine, I think, to give us a status report on the three different documents, or the two, and an explanation of how they interact that Tim asked. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The latest document is the one that has a little red strip at the top. What this document does is it takes the document that you have that has a lot of columns and a black column. It just takes that document. Yes. It deletes the issues that have been dealt with. And it leaves the ones that must be referred to either the experts or the DGI. The first column deals with what the issue is. And that is just taken exactly from the first document with the one black column. The way forward indicates who must be consulted. And if you go to that column B, you will see that it's DGI who will have to give some inputs. Experts will have to give some inputs. I think at one point, even I mentioned National Treasury will have to give an input on the cost and availability of funds in respect of the trust, the council, and the database. So the document with the red strip is just a summarized version of the document with the black column, just to crystallize issues that must be referred to experts. So the one with the red line is something that can be used, the one that's up on the screen now. That is something that can be used
to draft questions to experts and identify who should be still asked something and to come back. The idea was not for this document to be a final document. This is just aspects of from the submission issues that were still outstanding. I'm quite certain that as we go along, there will be a lot more. Then the document headed linking drafts 1.2 and 1.3 was simply to assist those task team members or committee members who received draft 1.2 end of June and worked on draft 1.2. Because draft 1.2 was, the content of draft 1.2 was mostly added to and not so much changed. So your comments on 1.2 will quite be relevant, very relevant to 1.3, but your sections will be different. So this document helps you to see, for instance, the application. Now let me see one that has changed. Your comments on the protection term in the Performance Protection Act. In draft 1.2, you would have worked on section 8H. So those comments can now just be transferred to section 8F, which is now the relevant section in draft 1.3. So that is just what that document is about. If you haven't worked on draft 1.2, then you can ignore that document. Okay.
Is that clear now on the explanation? Okay. Now it's really a document to assist us, I think, to progress in our deliberations. In other words, to say what is unresolved, how are we going to resolve it, who are we going to ask, who do we need to consult, and we need to start working on that document at some point. But I'd like to go back to the other issue that Advocate Stradon wanted to comment on.
I think in this forum I can take the liberty to speak much more informally, and maybe also take the liberty to say something that I'm much more reluctant for certain considerations to say in open committee. So please, before I respond to, and let me be frank, before I respond to very valid arguments and considerations raised by both Mr. Alberts and Mr. Harris, please allow me just to say a little something else. That I hope I'm not the kind of person that easily gets overly concerned. I am getting a little bit concerned as far as the future process of this legislation is concerned. And I would like to almost to urge the task team, when the matter is discussed with the full committee, please to bear this in mind. From our little perspective, it is very, very important that a policy, or maybe not a policy, but maybe a political stance, be adopted on the future approach on this bill. Needless to say, that is not for us to pronounce on, it is for the committee to pronounce. And the reason simply being, it will make our little task here as the team responsible for the drafting very difficult, if not virtually impossible, if we do not get that political stance on the future of this bill. Mr. Harris is quite correct in saying that there's no reason whatsoever, no cogent reason, why a law should not be referred back to the department, or why a minister who is responsible for introducing this law into Parliament should withdraw the bill from the committee, or for that matter, for the bill to be rejected by the Honourable fully-fledged committee. We fully agree. Why I'm saying this is just that, as Advocate van der Merwe has outlined, should the eventual political stance be that there should in fact be a separate principal act dealing solely with traditional knowledge, then all of a sudden the humble work that we are responsible for changes dramatically, because the processes are totally different. And now I would like to latch on to what Mr. Harris and Mr. Alberts have said. The intellectual property law community is a rather high profile and well-heeled fraternity. There is my second concern. If you ask any reasonable person, not necessarily, or maybe necessarily not a lawyer, if you ask any reasonably intelligent person to take the introduced bill and to compare it to this redraft as it stands as we talk here this morning, surely I'm convinced that that person will be saying, but hang on, even though we're dealing with the same subject matter, it is still intellectual property. And even so, it is in essence still nothing but the protection and recognition of this species of intellectual property. These two bills differ materially in style and in structure, and here and there, maybe even in substance. I can only imagine many of the commentators who had given testimony during the public hearings offering the following argument. First of all, given the fact that you had changed this bill to the extent that you couldn't even amend it, because the changes were of such a nature that the bill was no longer amendable along the conventional lines of producing an A bill, reflecting your amendments, and producing a B bill as required by Parliament, incorporating those amendments into the introduced bill. So that is the stance that you had taken. You had changed the bill to such an extent that it was no longer amendable. When are you going, Mr. Alberts, when are you going to give us the opportunity to properly reflect on this so-called redraft and possibly allow us a second bite at the cherry to come and give testimony again, maybe, to the committee on what you have before us now? Madam Chair, I hope I've said enough. I am slightly worried. I'm not binding the department in saying this, but let me simply concede, to that extent I agree with Mr. Alberts and Mr. Harris, and also my colleagues will tell me if I'm overstepping the line now between the three of us here. I think it is vitally important that the committee would take a stance as to whether this redraft as it is now should be made available to all stakeholders, to each and everybody carrying a can on this legislation, so that they can reflect and they can respond. And maybe that will eventually give further guidance on the future process as far as this bill. We're so fortunate to work, to have something to do. I know so many people who would like to, but they can't. But it's never nice to work on something that might sometimes, in this case, more my colleagues than me. It doesn't take hours or days, but weeks. And in the back of the mind, there is this fear or concern that in the end, this might prove to be a futile exercise. I'm finishing off. What I'm essentially saying is that there should now be a political stance on this bill, and that will guide us as to the further process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Look, as we all know, this is a task team. We can't take decisions here. I had hoped that we could have this discussion and come to agreement that we use this bill as our draft bill going forward into the negotiations. We obviously don't have agreement, so the decision is going to have to be taken by the committee. I don't think that this precludes us looking at some of the issues. We haven't got much time left, but I don't think it precludes us looking at some of the issues. But if I am reflecting on the discussions between my two colleagues from the opposition correctly, I would say we don't have agreement that this bill be used, and this decision or this issue will have to go straight back to the committee, where a decision will be made and we can proceed on that basis. Have I misunderstood you, Mr. Stradom?
Sorry.
Yeah.
I won't be a minute. Yeah. I haven't been fair to Mr. Harris. Can I please ask you a favor, Mr. Harris? The most recent redraft, just in response to the actual question that you raised, have a look at page 6 of that bill. In the middle of the page, there is a definition to be inserted in the Performance Protection Act of derivative traditional performance. And can we quickly read it? Means a literary, artistic, or musical work, or an expression of culture, or knowledge, or a performance, a significant portion of which, or an essential feature of which, and there it is, was derived from a hereditary traditional performance. We find the very same principle in each four of the principal acts. There, this definition signifies the interrelationship between a performance as a separately protectable intellectual property and traditional knowledge. There is the clear link between the two. So that begs the question then, why, if there is such an intimate relationship between indigenous knowledge and a performance, why do we want to sever them when it comes to providing the legislation? Just if you would maybe, in the meantime, just reflect on that definition and the other similar ones in clearly providing that nexus between each one of these property rights and traditional knowledge. I'm sorry, I've overstayed my welcome, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Where we are agreeing to disagree, because I put a proposal here a few minutes ago that I thought that we could use this document as the basis for taking forward our clause-by-clause discussions on the subject. But clearly, Mr. Harris indicated that he would disagree with me on that, and I'm not quite sure. I think we may still have something to work on through Mr. Alberts, but Advocate Alberts. But clearly we haven't got agreement. So in this forum, I can't take a decision going forward. I can't take a decision on my own in this regard. That decision will have to go to the full committee. So that is how I'm summarizing. I don't think that this meeting has been worthless. I think there's been some very useful engagements around what we are talking about on the white paper stuff, but also on the specific way in which this draft has been crafted to insert special protection for IK into our intellectual property framework. So I think that acknowledgement has come from everybody. I think it's useful to note that both Advocate Alberts and Mr. Harris have both indicated that this is a far improved document and that it goes quite a long way. In Mr. Harris's terms, I don't think it goes far enough. That's what he said. He said we're getting to sui generis, but we're not there. And in Advocate Albert's mind, to me, the key phrase he used was, will it work? I think we can, in our deliberations, maybe show that it will work. But obviously, it will be up to them to give their own views during the more formal committee. I can see two hands pushing to speak.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, maybe we can even go further. I think this is a massive improvement. I'm much, much happier with this on the table. And in fact, my issue actually arises from the fact that I think this new work simply raises the question, if we've acknowledged that this is a separate species, as I think we have, then should we not structure this as a separate law? That's all. I think actually the work that we've done is so valuable that it's actually raised a new question, in fact. And that's simply why I disagree with you, because I think we can perhaps structure this work as a separate law, and it might be simpler and more effective. But if the committee decides to go with the draft on the table, I'm much more happy with it than I was with anything we had before. So I don't want to be too negative about it. I just want to make one. I want to make one small point to Advocate Stratum, that if you're concerned about doing lots of work that never results in anything being implemented, you should try being a member of the opposition, where I've written numerous policies, not one of which has ever been implemented anywhere. So.
I think we can appreciate the work that you have done, and this is a huge improvement. We are not being negative just for the sake of being negative. As opposition parties, we also like to see something come out eventually that we contributed to and that works in the end of the day. It is frustrating to be in opposition and to say no, 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 and you get nowhere anyway. All of your views are just thrown out the window. So we try to be constructive. I think I would like to make a proposition regarding the way forward. And Advocate Stratum actually mentioned something that's very interesting, because we spoke about the experts having a look at the whole law and just get a feel of it and give us a sense of what they think of it, because they are the experts and we are actually not. Simple as that. And then also, we talked about the stakeholders, and I don't know how that process would work, but it would be very interesting to see how the stakeholders or the people who have made submissions, organizations, actually respond to this. And I'm not certain about whether that's allowable in terms of the committee's rules, but I think we must try and see if we cannot do that, because we will have a democratic response which we can then flow through the work that needs to be done going forward. Thank you.
Okay, you see, in the drafting of this redraft, we received the information from Advocate Thando Merwe when she made the presentation in Kartu, in the slide presentation, about all the documents that had been considered in the preparation of this redraft. Now, I think this precludes then what you are suggesting, which would be like an opening, if I'm not mistaken, of a kind of a public hearing thing. Because if you look at the inputs and the changes made and the documents that were used, and there were considerable documents that were used as source documents, and they're listed on this page 4, starting with the Academic and Nonfiction Authors Association down to the Itsonga Writers Association, don't know how you pronounce that, plus all the ones in between, including the NEDLAC report and all the others that have been and I think that we need to at some point say those views have been heard and have been incorporated. Obviously, people will have different views, and I'm sure that some of the views of some of the experts will also add to to what we have got on the table. But in the light of the current draft that is before us, I think that we can safely say and that there is significant attention being paid to the remarks that were made through a very lengthy and proper public hearing process. As I said, in terms of the experts, we will certainly be drawing on the experts because there are going to be some really key issues. But we need to work on something. We need to have a document that we can work on. And there is no harm in us amending, if I'm not mistaken, this document, because it forms the basis of the draft bill, as we would work on any other draft bill. So I think I would like to say again that from what I've heard here today, there is a much more positive attitude to the work that has been done and to the draft that we have on our table. We will have to take this to the committee to finalise that process. And perhaps then what we can do is begin the third process that I'd hope that we get to today from the committee stage tomorrow. So I hear you both, and I would also like to say that it would certainly be my intention, and I believe the intention of our chairperson, that we do listen carefully to what everybody has said, and that the final product will be a combination of the inputs and the consideration of not only the ANC members on the committee, but also the opposition and indeed those experts that we will be employing. So I would sincerely hope that you will in the end regard this as partly your work, as I will consider it partly my work. And I think at this point, unless anybody has any more burning to say, it would seem, yes, clearly burning there. Okay. I will let you speak and then I will wrap up after that. Thank you.
Thanks. So just three additional things. But firstly, I do actually support the proposal from Advocate Alberts, and will support that tomorrow if it comes up in committee. But I don't want to go into committee tomorrow and raise new items that weren't raised here. So let me just raise three additional things quickly. The first is that I intend following up with the chair on the invite to Mr. Nchitenze to come and explain the status of the WIPO report, which by now we all have, but which has no official status in the committee. I think it's a very instructive report, and I don't see why it shouldn't be admitted formally. Second thing is I will also follow up with the chair on her commitment to contact WIPO to find out if their views have changed or if they want to add anything to the views they presented to the committee in Geneva, which I believe she did recommit to in the Northern Cape. And then thirdly, the comments from Advocate Fundamava and Advocate Quayle's document around the cost of implementation and the fact that we need to perhaps consult Treasury. This process, as I understand it, was done through the request of two regulatory impact assessments, one of which is specifically focused on the cost of implementation. And those two documents have a similar status to the WIPO document. Everybody has them, but they haven't been formally admitted to the committee. So I'm going to raise the question tomorrow about the regulatory impact assessments, especially considering that now the cost issue is on the table. And I think the work's been done by those RIAs, so let's get them formally admitted to the committee. Thank you.
Yeah, fair enough. I think those are matters that have always been on the table, and you, of course, have the complete right to do that. I, for my own part, will get back to the chair and see what progress she has made in order to ensure that she is able to answer to those questions. I'm sure she knows that you are going to raise them. But I think I just better mention at this point, which is really not for the minutes, but our chair has been extremely ill. I don't know if you know that. She's been confined to her bed. She's been, I think it must have been the icy weather in the safari lodge in Kuruman that brought this on, but she's had a really unpleasant virus which has caused her to be dizzy, and she wasn't able to get out of bed, actually. So she's been really ill. So from what I can gather, tomorrow will be chaired by the whip. But that does not stop the work. Obviously, we have staff and we have a backup, and so that work should be done. And fair enough, raise it there. But, and I'm sure that you will both raise some of the points that you've raised here, and we will get an impression from the rest of the committee how we will take this matter forward. But really, I think there've been a number of useful things that we've got out of today. I think certainly the issue of what is happening at WIPO is very relevant. I sincerely hope that all of us will be able to read the information that has been presented to us and the links that have been provided. I also have agreed that we should look at having some kind of arrangement whereby we are kept informed about those negotiations, and that science and technology are asked to give us that information as well, so that we can in fact follow what is happening there and what South Africa's position is on the same subject that we are legislating on. I don't see that as a conflict of interest in any way. In fact, I think it would support our work. So that is an important thing. I think also that we have had a very positive response from the members of the opposition on the new draft, and although we don't agree finally perhaps in its final format, I think we've made progress towards some kind of agreement on some of the issues, and I think that's all very positive. I thank you all very much for coming to this meeting and for being part of it, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. As I say, it will be chaired by the whip, and we hope that we can have answers to the questions that were raised in the Northern Cape meeting and subsequently. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.